thank you all for joining us. We're just getting underway now with our World Peace Diet Circle call for February 18th, 2016. It's great to be able to join with everyone who's on the call here this evening. And let's see, we are in Florida now. We've been in Florida for, I guess, we've been in and out, actually. Last month, we were mostly out of the country in South Africa. And Dubai, we've been enjoying our time in Florida the last maybe three or four weeks. And just gave a lecture three nights ago, I guess it was, in West Palm Beach at Hippocrates Health Institute. We'll be talking a little bit about that in a few minutes. But I want to welcome everyone to the call. Thank you for joining us. It's delightful to be able to join together on our World Peace Diet Circle call and have a foundation that we share for leaping into a deeper understanding of the impact of animal agriculture on our society and benefits of learning how to more effectively advocate for vegan living and thrive in our own lives in this somewhat insane culture that we're living in, although hopefully we can be an aspect of sanity in the whole thing. So I'm noticing, actually, that I'm hoping you can hear me okay. I'm noticing that our screen here is not responding very well. And that's maybe one of the challenges that we may be having here this evening. We'll see how it all goes, but we're in a campground in our rolling home in north central Florida in an area that is really not very conducive to connecting to the internet. It's kind of very rural. We're right on the shores of the Ocklawaha River near the Silver River. It's a beautiful spot to be for a little while. And yet I can see as I'm looking at my computer screen that it's basically not responding. So, but I am also assuming that you can hear me just fine. So we'll go ahead and continue on here. And let's see. So what I'd like to do is, like I very often do at the beginning of our call, is just take a few minutes to tune in together. We're from many parts of the United States and possibly other parts of the world here this evening. And it's just, I think, very just nurturing to remember that, to remember that we are here gathered from all corners of creation and on planet Earth, and also that we're dedicated to the same essential goal of minimizing violence to non-human animals and other human beings, and to maximizing our capacity to be part of the solution to the problem. So we dedicate our time together to the healing of all of our relationships with each other, to the healing of all of our relations, because all humans and non-human beings are our relations. We're related intimately, really, in many ways with everyone, since we're sharing the same earth and same possibilities to create a world of joy, peace, and freedom, or the opposite of those. And we give thanks for the many thousands and really millions of people who are present on the earth today and who have gone before us, who have dedicated their lives to awakening consciousness, their own consciousness, as well as to help awaken others as well, and know that we are together part of a movement of maturing human consciousness to a point where we can actually fulfill our destiny here in a more constructive way, fulfill our purpose on this beautiful planet in a way that reflects our natural wisdom and compassion, which have been so suppressed by being raised in a society where we're forced to eat animal foods from the time we're little infants. So thank you all for joining us. We just give thanks, knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the world from our being together on this call this evening will be ripples that will bring healing to the whole infinite web of relations that we've been discussing. And yes, there's lots of great things happening. I think you're aware of those things, and maybe not. We'll talk about some of those, hopefully. We were just at Hippocrates Health Institute in the West Palm Beach area, and I was thinking, and I was talking to Madeline about it also, that it might be nice to talk a little bit about that experience in the very beginning of the call, because, you know, it's always a big education to learn what people are doing at these communities where they're living a vegan lifestyle. You know, we've had quite a few people talking about how great it would be to live in a vegan community. And there are not that many vegan communities. You know, I've talked about that on this call. We've written about it, how, you know, I lived for a while at the farm in Tennessee back in 1975, which is a vegan community. There's Gabriel Cousins' community, the Living Tree, I guess it's called, the Tree of Life, in Patagonia, Arizona, near the border, and that's a vegan community based. Basically, a lot of people coming in to heal from various diseases and ailments and so forth. And there's also a third main one, which is Hippocrates Health Institute in Southern Florida. We were just there, and Madeline was very inspired, I think, for some reason she'll share with us now. So I'd like to just invite Madeline to the phone to talk a little bit about whatever you'd like to talk about, Madeline. Just it's all yours. And like I said, we have a little bit of a phone challenge. So I'm going to be sort of in the background here while Madeline talks about her experience and ideas that came from being at Hippocrates a few days ago.
Yes, so hi everybody, and I'm really, we had such a great time at Hippocrates. First of all, it's a beautiful place. We never actually realized how big and how beautiful, how lush and all the different gardens and everything they are. They have a veggie garden, herb garden. They grow sprouts. They have an outside gym, which is really very creative. One is kind of in the trees and has all these devices to stretch and try one's powers and strengthening the muscles and tendons and everything, the bones and one's spirit, especially because outside in the sun and trees and the air, I think it's so much better than having a gym inside. So this was really nice, and all the pools and everything. And I remember a time when I was in Greece. There was an open-air museum of Hippocrates, who lived over 2,000 years ago. And there was something which really caught my mind. And what he's saying is, I mean, just listen to this and contemplate this. Thy food shall be thy medicine, and thy medicine, thy food, shall be thy food. I mean, just think how far away, what a distance we went away from this truth. Now it's about texture, about taste, about, you know, all these kind of, if it's delicious or, and we kind of mainly lost all the deliciousness of the basic good food, the basic kind of manufactured food went so far away, and look at all the illnesses, and of course the corporation buy right into it and make us even go farther away from the truth and the health and all that. And it's a great business, you know, as we know, for the sickness industry and all that. And it reaches far away into war, into all the disasters we have nowadays. And so in that open-air museum, there was also something else written, which these two things really got my attention. The second thing was that Hippocrates didn't actually heal or take somebody as a patient who didn't follow his dietary suggestions. So just think, now it's exactly the opposite. I mean, it's like this just came alive last time now. I mean, like a couple of days ago when we were there, that they really, in Hippocrates, in West Palm Beach, they're really walking the talk. And all these sprouts, a dozen of, I mean, at least of different sprouts, buckwheat sprouts, beet sprouts, sunflower sprouts, and all the rest of it, we know, and little mini peppers and all these wonderful things, and simple dressings, nothing fancy, and lots of garlic, garlic in the morning, midday, evening, turmeric and all these different things, and people just eat themselves healthy again. And we could all be healthy if we would follow this a little more. So I'm really kind of so inspired that there is such a center, such a resort. I mean, it's a real resort. It's like so beautiful and so healthy and so life-affirming. I'm in awe. It's great. So, but I like to open it if somebody has any questions. *6, press *6, and I'm happy to answer if you have any.
Great. Thanks, Madeline. That was very well, a great summary of our experience at Hippocrates, and we've been there a number of times. But yeah, as Madeline said, definitely if you have any questions or comments at all about anything, actually, as we go along here this evening, this is the, you know, once a month, we're open for your questions or comments or ideas or concerns about anything that has to do with vegan living, anything that relates perhaps to what Madeline was just saying, or actually anything else. So I just press *6, and then we can see it here on the screen, and hopefully I can see it. Actually, I noticed this thing. The screen is kind of locking up again. Oh, no, it's working again. Anyway, press *6, and at some point we'll notice, and we'll unmute your phone. So one of the things that I noticed, and Madeline talked a lot about the physical beauty, actually, of this place, and we've been going there now for almost 10 years. Since the book Prasad came out, and it's been good to see that as more and more clients have been coming from around the world, really. I think you remember, if you listened to the Vegan Palooza, that the woman who is Heather Mills, I interviewed Heather Mills, And she is one of the, you know, very famous vegan activists, actually, and how she was so sick, and she went to Hippocrates, and the doctors couldn't heal her at all. They had given up on her, and we hear those stories a lot in Hippocrates. People go there with things that the medical establishment cannot deal with, and it's really a, you know, a multi-pronged approach they use, but like Madeline said, it's very refreshing, just departure from the idea that food has to have a certain mouth feel and has to have a certain flavor, or I'm just not going to eat it. You know, I mean, it was, you know, the food was, you know, kind of Spartan, really. I mean, it's just basically no breakfast. You fast in the morning, just have a little bit of garlic water and ginger water and garlic, and then lunch is, you know, just an amazing array of different types of sprouts. I can't tell you all the different types of sprouts. Lentil sprouts, mung bean sprouts, millet sprouts, buckwheat sprouts, sunflower sprouts, many other pea sprouts, and so many. We went to they have a whole building where they have employees that do nothing but make huge quantities of sprouts, and the sprouts are beautiful, and they've been working on perfecting the art of growing sprouts, you know, now for like 20 years, and so they have just everything down really to a science. It's a beautiful, you know, space where there's, where they have classical music playing and just the right type of water, the cheap purified water and lighting schedule and, you know, the whole thing. So they just really grow and have a lot of life force. And then there's also just some vegetables, basically also, and very oil-free kind of dressing, and the luxury is to maybe have a half an avocado or some olives. But the food, you know, is just designed to be really alive. It's alive food for cleansing and healing. And I think, you know, it's just very interesting to see, that approach combined with, you know, they do have some typical sort of medical type people there because they have to, I mean, for sure, you know, people take medications and things, and if people come with all kinds of conditions like heart disease and liver disease and, leukemia, different kinds of cancer, and, you know, all looking for a miracle cure. And the amazing thing is a lot of them do actually have a miracle cure, you know. And what was also very, affirming for me was that they, you know, asked me to speak, and, I spoke on the metaphysical dimension of food and the spiritual dimension, really, of healing. And we had a packed house. We had over 100 people, probably 150 people there. And they insisted that I do a PowerPoint, which I'm not that, I don't know if you do a PowerPoint, but I did. But the response was really excellent, and I think it's part of the basic paradigm there that they don't look at a person as just a physical body that's a chemical, biological machine that you have to tamper with and fool around with and give some drugs or cut out a bad part or put in an artificial part or, you know, this technical approach that essentially doesn't, you know, to me it's essentially disempowering at a very deep level for any type of real healing. But they look at the person much more as a being, and then look at the importance of nutrition, of reducing all the chemicals in the environment, which of course Madeline talks about a lot, in clothing, in cleaning products, you know, all the toxins that are everywhere. They really try to eliminate all the toxins, really have high quality, you know, bedding and everything, you know, just everything. Free from chemical carcinogenic materials, and then just a huge emphasis on beauty. And I think that's, you know, we both agree, Madeline and I, that increasing beauty in people's lives, allowing them to take walks in nature where there's statues everywhere and beautiful gardens, and like Madeline said, they have a bunch of people go to these weight rooms, you know, a bunch of like a weight room. This is an outdoor one, and it's very creative and playful, and you know, colored, you know, yellow and green, and really just fun to do. You're lifting your own body weight, kind of a thing, you know. So it's very creative. Anyway, it was just like that everywhere. Everything about it was had that quality, and so it's great to see vegan communities that
actually are walking the talk, like Madeline said, or where people are going, they're healing, they're talking about living a life of kindness and compassion, they're introducing. There's a fellow there named Philip who is a student of the World Peace Diet, and he's been given the approval to go ahead and teach a regular course there for the people who are coming for, to be healed on ethical veganism, based on the teachings in the World Peace Diet. So they're really bringing in the ideas in the World Peace Diet into their program for healing, because the Brian Clement, basically the founder, he's the founder, but he's been running it for a long time, and it's really been expanding and growing enormously. Understands that there's a deeper psychological component to health, and that veganism is much more than just simply eating a plant-based diet for health reasons, that there's an ethical and metaphysical and spiritual component that's very important for our cultural health, physical health. And so it was just great to see the enormous support that this idea has been getting there, and I think in other places as well. So I see that we do have someone who has a question. I'm going to go ahead and put our phone on speakerphone so Madeline can hear, and it's Marlene. So just to see.
Okay, so Marlene, let's see here.
Are you there? Can you hear?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, yeah, what would you like to say?
Yes, thank you, Madeline and Will. And Madeline, I had a question on Hippocrates from 2,000 years ago. What was his dietary guidelines? Was it vegan or perhaps at that time vegetarian?
At that time when I visited, it's about maybe, it's over 35 or 40 years ago, I wasn't a vegan at that time, so I was not actually paying attention to that. I was more into organic, into a basic lifestyle, into beauty, into health. But I didn't make the connection into vegan at that time. I was a vegetarian, but not vegan.
And I've done a little bit of research into that, Marlene, because I was curious. And basically what people say is that there's really no way to know for sure about that. There isn't a lot of evidence. He was a long time back. We're talking about 2,500 years ago. But he did say in his writings that the same soul lives in all living creatures. You know, he had that idea that every living creature has a soul, that not just human beings, but that all creatures have souls. So I think, there's quite a bit of evidence that he, maybe did follow a vegetarian or vegan way of living, but if anybody else knows anything more, please let us know. But that's about the extent of what I know. That it's a distinct possibility, but it wasn't. It's not really known for sure.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Okay, so thanks, Marlene. So I'm going to continue on here with doing the phone the other way for the moment here. I think it maybe sounds a little bit better. So right now we're, experiencing, I guess, maybe a little bit of trouble with our internet connection, but we're going forward here and doing and hoping that, if you press star 6, I will, I'll see it here sooner or later. So, that's a really bright spot, I think, on our cultural landscape today. I mean, there's a lot of dark spots on the cultural landscape when we look at, especially when we look at the health field, when we look at what people are doing in order to try to be healthy, and we see the kind of medical system that really emphasizes, in many ways, an approach based on chemicals and invasive procedures and so forth, and people suffering so much. I have several friends, actually, or acquaintances who
have had to go in for some kind of treatment to the hospitals, and they seem to always come out much worse off than when they went in. And it's almost like, they say it's one of the most dangerous, like the two most dangerous places on the planet are, there's this place in northern Australia where there's a lot of crocodiles, and you're really, you know, you can get eaten alive, and then, or a hospital. So, I don't know. But, I mean, you know, there's just, hard to stay out of hospitals if you can, that's my feeling. But just to see a place like this, which is completely different, where there's just, it's filled with light and beauty and incredibly delicious food and people healing and positive stories and optimism, and everywhere there's, you know, little positive signs saying health, happiness, Hippocrates, you know, things like that. I think, you know, the idea of building a positive internal environment is a really important part of healing, and I think it's also an important part of having an effective vegan movement. I know a lot of people in the vegan movement are frustrated and angry, and sometimes we feel that it's hopeless, you know, that we feel that we have to become more destructive. You know, we have to really get out our sledgehammer and start bashing down the walls of the banks and Monsanto and Cargill and McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken, and we should all, you know, bomb them. You know, I mean, you know, this kind of, we just got to get rid of all this. And yet we of course know at a deeper level that that's ridiculous. I mean, these are all outer manifestations of an inner condition, and the inner condition is the disconnectedness that really is at the heart of what animal agriculture is. It's disconnecting from the animals, and so the response is not to be more violent. The response is to eschew all violence and to cultivate ahimsa, nonviolence, which is loving kindness, and loving kindness for all living beings, for animals as well as future generations. And so that's one of the things I think we're starting to see more and more clearly. It doesn't mean we, you know, don't have any more feelings anymore, that we don't get outraged perhaps when we see the terrible violence towards animals. However, what we do is not to condemn or attack the perpetrators, but instead to work to educate people, and to, I think, also to, you know, to try to not only, you know, boycott the violence by not voting for it, but also to try to pass legislation and educate, you know, all the things we can do to organize and so forth. So that we can transform the foundation of our society. And I think it's, you know, obviously it's a big job, but as people awaken, any job can be accomplished, and each one of us has a part that we can play in that. And I think the people at Hippocrates are definitely playing an important part, as well as, I know everyone is playing an important part. It's hard to say which part is more important than another. Okay, so I'd like to... actually, I see now the computer's working again, and we have two more people that have pressed *6. So I'm not sure who this person is. It's the phone number is 478, is the area code 478. So I'm going to unmute your phone and go ahead.
Hi, Will and Madeline. It's Michelle in Georgia, vegan activist.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Well, I was studying on Hippocrates, and it seemed pretty much like he was pretty green and let medicine be your food and food be your medicine. But at some point, there were some there was harmism, and in his instructions, that could have been for some later just one, but. I think sometimes we don't really know what was going on, we're really thinking back then either.
Okay, so Michelle, somehow your phone is breaking up a little bit here. It's hard to understand exactly what you were saying. Sorry. But I think you were saying it's a little bit hard to understand. It sounds like your phone is breaking up, though, actually.
So,
interesting that the panacea, that was like green herbs, was a panacea. And I think it's the total vegetarian, like, seconds.
It's just not coming through. Maybe you can get a little better connection and call back, because it's just actually not terrible. Okay, thanks. We also have, I think it's area code 404, 434, that number. I'll go ahead and unmute you, your phone, because you pressed star six. So go ahead.
Yes, my question is not so much about Hippocrates, but you had touched on the whole spiritual aspect. And
right.
I have been practicing for years. I've had a group that has been gathering at my center practicing non-separation. And all of a sudden I'm finding myself in a dilemma, because this is my center, of how to look at non-separation when they're all consuming animal products.
Right. Yeah.
I'm really struggling all of a sudden with this practice. It's not the spiritual teaching itself. It's the group that's become a struggle. Like, wow, we've been doing this for so many years that how can we be practicing this when everyone is consuming animal products?
Right. So that's an excellent question. Is the group, do you guys eat together, or do you just come together and meditate and discuss and then not eat together? So it's just sort of abstract. It's more actually like in your face.
We discuss the spiritual text that we are studying, and they're very health conscious, conscious people, but I don't know that animal product has entered the equation, so I obviously don't want to be judgmental about it. But I'm finding myself a little bit in a dilemma of, wow, this, all this time I've been studying this with them, and how can we not be practicing separation if we're still, not me, because I'm vegan, but if there's still animal consumption?
Right. I think this is a question that a lot of people in many different spiritual practices and traditions have to wrestle with when they become vegan, and all of the most of the other practitioners in their community are still eating animal foods. And the question is, so now what? What do I do? Do I confront them about it? Do I just try to lead by example? Do I just leave and go to some other group where the people really are vegan and I feel more comfortable? What do I do? And I think it's a very personal question. I don't think there's any one right answer. Some people say, okay, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay in this group because I've been called here, and I'm going to try to work within the group because I think they are open to making a change, and I'm going to try to help out and maybe raise awareness. If they're talking about and practicing non-separation, then I'm going to try to exemplify that and hopefully shine light on the subject and raise awareness about this in this community, and that can be a help. And other people say, okay, these people are just too asleep for me. The teaching doesn't have the same appeal anymore like it did, because to me it seems hypocritical to say one thing and act in another way. And so they end up leaving because they just want to do something that's more in alignment with their feelings and convictions. And very often, do go to, involve with a group that's more vegan-oriented, and that's a solution for them. So, or maybe start a group, start something else, that is more in alignment. It's a definitely a very, very difficult situation to be in, though, I understand, because, you know, it's something that's very intimate. You know, your spiritual teacher is very intimate. I'm just getting a lot of noise on your phone. Do you want to say anything in response?
Well, yeah, the dilemma is it's my center, and so they're coming to me. And I did want to say this was sort of out there for me this Sunday, with it being Valentine's Day, is my service. I lead a Sunday service, a church service. It is a church. And it was about loving ourselves. And so I said the most loving thing I can do is practice non-harming. And so I actually did give a little bit of the peace talk. I did give it to that group, but, not to this other particular group with this other particular practice. I did Google some of the people that I've admired over the years to see if they were vegan, and I mentioned it to a couple of people, and all of a sudden they felt like I was judgmental because these people weren't vegan. So that was kind of interesting little segue, too. And I said, well, I'm not judging them. I'm just saying it just reminds me to follow, you know, I can listen to the teaching, but to not follow the teacher.
Right. So did you, I'm just out of curiosity, I mean, you said you gave a peace talk. You mean you gave a vegan talk?
I did. In my particular circle, what I do is I introduce a topic. It's very Native American, and we pass a talking stick. And so my topic was about loving ourselves, and so I just decided the most loving thing, what I shared in my piece was the most loving thing I could do was to practice non-harming, and this meant, and I sort of used, you know, some of your lovely peace talk. And I thought this is just the perfect opportunity because that's what loving myself is loving all of my friends who aren't human. And so I did have a good opportunity this past Sunday to do that,
right,
which was terrific.
Right. Well, good. I think that's the thing. You know, do you want to say anything more about it? You know, it's or maybe keep us apprised in future calls and let us know how it's going. You know, I think it's sounds like you're on an adventure of trying to bring more vegan awareness into the spiritual group that you're involved with. And, I think it's the best thing we can do, actually, is to try to bring this message to people who may be open to it. So, yeah, keep us posted. And is there anything else you want to add to it? Or if not, then...
I do have one more tiny little thing. I don't want to take up too much time, but... I've been very good not to judge people, but I do have a little bit of judgment, and I don't know, I would just be curious if other people have had this experience. Where I find that I do go into a little bit of judgment is when somebody gets really upset, like, let's say, about facing a lion, which is very upsetting, but I'm never quite understanding how that can have so much public, heartfelt anguish for people, but yet they're putting something else on their dinner plate.
And what was the thing you said? Like somehow your phone broke up right there. That one.
The place that I really struggle with judgment is. I don't really judge people, in their practice, but it's a little difficult when, like with Cecil the Lion, and I have compassion for that, but how some people can get so upset about Cecil the Lion, but they're eating Betsy the Cow.
right.
That's when I find myself going into judgment, and I'm like, don't say anything, you know. And I was just curious if other people have had that experience, like when somebody hears of an inhumane thing, but yet they're practicing it.
Right, right. Well, you know what I would, I think I'm going to mute your phone because there's quite a lot of noise on it here. I think basically it's really important to, as you say, you know, not to judge people. I think that is a good idea. There's a couple of things I just want to say about that. Number one, when someone talks about how they're really upset about Cecil the Lion being killed in this heartless way, I think it's a great opportunity, actually, to just in a positive way say, yeah, you know, I feel the same way. I was really upset to see, you know, someone going out of their way to go and cause, you know, misery and violence to an animal for no reason other than their own yearning to kill. And you know, and also, you know, and just use it as a segue. You know, and also, it brings home to me the reason I'm so happy that I'm not eating animal foods, because, you know, I realize that this is what's happening to literally millions of animals. They're getting killed completely unnecessarily, the same way Cecil the Lion was killed, but they don't have a name. And a story that's publicized, but they all do have a name, and they all do have a story, and they all are equally the subject of their lives. It's just been great, and emphasizing, you know, the sense that I'm so glad that I've been able to question that underlying story and really the freedom and happiness that I have from that, and the health and so forth, and maybe say something about how wonderful it is to see that more and more people are moving in the direction of making the connection between our violence towards animals for food and the other violence in the world. So that's one point. And then the other point I think it's important to emphasize is this whole idea about, you know, people not wanting to be judged. That's a little bit self-serving. I mean, that's quite self-serving. In other words, if I go up to somebody, say I'm walking down the street and I see someone who's abusing a dog, for example, and if I go up to that person and say, you know, would you please stop abusing that dog? You know, it's really terrible to hurt a defenseless animal like that. And if the person's response is, hey, you know, don't judge me. You know, I don't want, you know, you're just being judgmental. And, you know, the obvious case is you're not judging them. It's not about them. It's not about them. It's about the dog. It's about the animals. You're defending the animal. It's not about judging them. It's, you know, this whole idea that, you know, their feelings are somehow more important than what they're doing to the animals. It's just ridiculous. So that's the important thing to say is if we have a feeling of judgment, it's not, you know, or if people are defensive, like they're saying that we're judging them, you know, it's very important to make it clear that it's not about them. What we are doing is protecting animals, and it's about the animals whose lives are being horribly abused by the actions of human beings, and to be afraid or unwilling to ask that people refrain from violence, to encourage people to think of animals as beings worthy of respect and compassion and caring. That's our calling. You know, I mean, that's obviously a call. That's not anyone who's at all connected to the opportunity that we have as a human being on this earth knows that we're here not to turn away from opportunities to protect life, but to open to them and do the best we can in the situation. So. Anyway, that's something I think that is frequently misunderstood in the vegan movement and in our society in general. When people think that vegans are being judgmental, and people use that as a way to sort of allow themselves to keep eating meat and dairy, they say, well, you know, I'm not going to allow myself to be judged by people. I'm going to eat whatever I want because, you know, the vegans are judgmental. And so I think it's very important to be clear that we're not judging people. We're asking people to stop their violence, and we're
doing the best we can to exemplify that. And then the other thing that kind of goes with that is teaching from the World Peace Diet from the last chapter of making an explicit understanding that in any crime that's committed publicly, and that's really what animal agriculture is, it's a public crime. It's a crime against human beings and animals on a massive scale that's public. And so in any public crime, there's three rules. Obviously, there's the victims, the perpetrators, and the witnesses who are watching this, who are not participating in it. And as I discuss in the World Peace Diet, I think it's very helpful to remember this, that there's a natural sense, of course, on the part of the victims to hope that the witnesses or the bystanders will do something to step in and help, and a natural sense among the perpetrators to try to ignore the witnesses and to try to discount them and to try to get them to shut up and not say anything and not call the police or not step in to help, because that's what they're doing. They're perpetrators. They don't want this to be made obvious in public. That's the whole point. And so our role as the only ones who are the witnesses or the bystanders to this massive ongoing crime, if we're vegans, we're the only ones who are not participating in this violence, is to develop an ability to reach the perpetrators in a way that will help them to question what they're doing. And I think it's right not to just blame and shame them, because that gives them a good opportunity to just say, you know, forget you people. I'm not going to listen to you because that's all you do is call us names and things. So it's important to help people understand that you've been where they are. You're not judging them. You understand exactly how it is to be eating meat and dairy, because we all did the same thing. And again, how wonderful it is that we've been able to question that and the multiple benefits of that, and to emphasize that. And then also, I think it's important to realize, if you're putting a lot of energy into trying to bring a message to a person or to a group of people and they're just not open to it, then it's better not to put a lot of energy into that, because that can be very draining. And there's so many people who are open to this message, and to use our energy in that way and to do something that we love doing, that we feel empowered by, that we really love to do, you know. And I think when we do that, when we create context for activism that make us feel like we're making some progress and we're reaching people, and that's what, you know, I feel that a lot. And that's one of the reasons Madeline and I travel so much and give so many lectures, is that we hear it, you know, we see it. We hear, you know, people say to us, you know, I came to your lecture and I went vegan, or I read the book and went vegan, or whatever it was. And they're helping, you know, as best they can to change. So the importance, I think, of doing as much inner soul searching as we can to get in touch with what type of advocacy we really like to do, you know, what makes us happy, where our skills are, of course, is important, you know, what we're good at, but also what we enjoy, what kind of thing we like to do, where we feel like we really have something to give, you know. And there's an article I have in our resources for the World Peace Diet Circle for this year, for example, I mean, for this month, which I think is pretty amazing. There's a woman in England, her name is Fiona Oakes, and she's a vegan ultra athlete for the animals. You know, she's, to me, is an amazing, she's an extremely, you know, radical example of this. But here's a woman who owns an animal sanctuary with her husband in, outside London somewhere in England, where she's got many animals, I don't know, like 100 or 200 animals that they have to take care of, just the two of them. But she was just racking her brain trying to figure out a way that she could do more, you know, and somehow bring the vegan message to more people. And she realized that vegan athletes have a special way to bring the message to people, because people really look up to athletes in our society, and someone who's a vegan, you know, can bring it. So she just decided to become an ultra athlete and you know, just put in an enormous amount of time in her spare time training. I mean, she would get up at 4 a.m. to, you know, feed the animals and then go running. And so she's become one of the top, she holds many records, actually, of running across the Sahara Desert and, you know, all the way across the Arctic and the Antarctic, and I don't know, all kinds of extreme things she's been able to do. as a vegan and really bring massive attention in world media to this vegan ultra athlete. But she's doing the whole thing only because she was trying to figure out a way to help people understand the benefits of veganism and protecting animals. And so she always wears shirts that say vegan on them, and she always talks about the fact she's a vegan, and she makes a huge deal out of it. And I think that, to me, that's just an example of someone, you know, going in an extreme way. I mean, I think about the physical exhaustion that she endures continually in running. She ran like a marathon on every continent in something like, you know, 10 days or something. And so that kind of thing, to do that, because what she always says is, well, this may be bad for me, but it's nothing compared to what the animals have to go through. You know, I mean, that to me is an amazingly altruistic motivation that is really quite inspiring. So, but anyway, thank you so much for that question. Those excellent questions. Those are really the kinds of questions I think that we all have as we, if we're involved in spiritual groups. I know I've had this so much with the Unity movement, many other movements, spiritual healing movement, the Buddhist movement, the Jain movement, the Unitarian movement. We've been involved in so many Christian Science movement, you know, a whole lot of different movements that are spiritual, where people are still eating animal foods, and what do we do in the face of that, you know? And it's an ongoing question. You know, 30, 40 years, we're still involved with Unity. And actually, it's really neat. You know, I was just the other day, for example, I had this conversation with a woman who's the new minister of the Unity Church right outside Washington, D.C., and we've been going to that church for like 24 years, you know, and I remember 24 years ago, for the very first time I went to that church, it was a different minister and his wife, and she was very sick and kind of obese, they didn't eat very well, and I remember giving them advice nutritionally, and, you know, it would be really great to look for a plant-based diet, and she didn't want to hear it, you know, really, and then we went back there again, and I remember it was kind of one of those situations where it was tricky because we were invited out. I can't remember the exact details, but it was something like, you know, we all had dinner together, and there was some issue about who was going to pay the bill, and I just said, you know, I can't pay for any meat or dairy. You know, we're not going to do it. You know, and since you had that, you know, I'm not going to pay for your meal. that was, and they didn't like that. But we just had to be honest about it. And then, but then eventually, you know, she got so sick that they had to retire. And then another minister came and his wife, and it was the same kind of situation. You know, they were not eating well. They weren't vegans, obviously. And we would go and we would speak and do lectures and workshops and concerts. And, you know, we would also, you know, advise them. I told them we're vegan. It'd be great if they did. And move in that direction too. And then he had a stroke at one point, and then he's out of the ministry. He was completely out. The stroke just basically wiped him out. And then there was another minister for a couple of years, and that now I just talked to the minister, the new minister at this church. It was so great because the woman said, yeah, you know, I'm at this church and I'm new here. And I noticed on your website that you're vegan. And I said, yeah. And she said, we'd love to have you come to the church and really talk about veganism in our church. It was so great. You know, after all these years at this church of trying to get the ministers, and they never were open to it. And now there's this new minister who's like, we want to bring the vegan message to the Unity Church here. And she said, yeah, there's just more and more interest, and people really are aware more and more about the consequences of our food choices. So, you know, I mean, you gotta kind of, you know, it's been 25 years, but, you know, we've gotten to the point where we now have a minister who's interested in actually bringing the vegan message to the church. And I think that's the kind of, and that's part of it, you know. I mean, I have this friend, this isn't totally apropos, I don't think, but I have this friend who asked a question of Edgar Mitchell. I don't know if you know Edgar Mitchell. He's the great scientist. I think he's really great in many ways. He's the founder of IONS, the Institute of Noetic Science. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon. And when he was in outer space, he had a mystical cosmic consciousness kind of experience and realized that all life is connected and that there's this other dimension to life. And he came back to the Earth and started this institute called the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And I worked a lot with them in the early years when I was getting my PhD at Berkeley and focusing on educating intuition. And it's been somewhat disappointing that they're not vegans really in their orientation, but in any event, they are really trying to, open the conversation about the importance of consciousness and not just seeing everything materialistically. And they've really done a lot of great work. Anyway, my friend asked Edgar Mitchell a question in a large auditorium where there was probably 1,000 people, and he had a Q&A session. And my friend asked him, he said, how do you think, what's the best way, what is the best way to talk to people about these new ideas and how consciousness is really the foundation of existence and not matter? What's the best way to bring this, to help people understand this? And Edgar Mitchell's answer was, this revolution is not going to happen conversation by conversation. It is only going to happen funeral by funeral. And so, what he was basically saying, I think it's stating a little bit too strong, but what he was saying was, people's minds are made up. You can talk all you want, but basically what we got to hope for is that the old, people are going to die off, and hopefully, a newer, younger generation is going to come in, and people will be just more open to these ideas. It's got to do that. I mean, in a way, at this church, it looks like it's kind of how it happened. But I think, there is some truth to what he's saying in the sense that hopefully as time goes on. But the thing with flu, of course, is that the program is so incredibly strong. Little infants, Mel and I were just talking about it, today, how little kids, we were thinking back in our own lives and how as little kids, how we ate eggs and cheese and bacon and all we ate, we just eat this stuff, our parents. They feed it, we eat it. We don't, we know it's the right thing to eat because that's what we're supposed to do. And just how incredibly powerful that is. It's just quite daunting to realize that the power of that. So it's great to change. A lot of people talk about the importance of getting to the children. And it's wonderful that our, that Lorena, I was going to mention that, Lorena Mukke, who's one of our facilitators who's spoken here quite a bit, she's making enormous progress, actually, with her new nonprofit organization, which is called Ethical Choices Program. And there are now, they just had a training in Atlanta, I think last weekend. A number of Ropi's Tai facilitators are now in the program, actually. The training is really going well. The funding is really going well. There's actually an anonymous donor who's basically committing to fund. He must have a very deep pockets because he's funding this thing. And now there are a number of people who are being hired basically to go in to high schools in communities all over the United States. Is just growing very quickly, and it's just creating a huge buzz. And it's just great to see how this is happening. So I agree with Lorena that it's very important to talk to the youth, and she feels, and I think she's really smart, and she knows that you cannot really get too far with kids before the age of high school in the sense that you're going right up against their parents. But with high school-age kids, you're getting to the age where they're old enough to begin to make their own choices around food. And so they're really, that's a good age to focus on. I think college and high school are really good ages to focus on because it's young people are beginning to make their own choices. Of course, if we can get to the adults and awaken them, that's the best in a way because they're the ones who are raising the children in many cases, the parents. Of the future parents, but if we can get to college-age kids, they're very often going to be parents also. So, and then when children are raised by vegan parents, of course, it's a whole different thing. As my sister's daughter is attesting to, and she's got two vegan kids, vegan from birth, and they're thriving and just so beautiful. All right, so thank you so much for that call. I have another person here who I'm not sure if you're still there. I'm going to try unmuting your call. This is area code 402-812, but I think maybe, I don't know, try hitting star 6 again. I think my system maybe has dropped you or something. But there's also, I noticed Lily has pressed, see if that works. Lily, are you there?
Hi, Will. I wanted to back. Hi. I wanted to go back to Unity. That was the Charles and Myrtle Fillmore operation, right? Or was it? Or was that Unitarian?
Charles and Myrtle Fillmore is Unity. Yeah, that's Unity.
Yeah, so that's the church you were going to for over 20 years in New York?
Right.
And, of course, you make a big point in the World Peace Diet about how they didn't even use leather-bound Bibles, and they talked about how temperance would come if people, you know, had a more plant-based diet. And yet, is the Unity Church today completely dropped all of that?
Yeah, they've completely dropped all of that.
All of that has been dropped. Just kind of like Buddhism has been dropped, you know, has basically,
right.
Unless you have hardcore Buddhist teachings like you did in Korea. Okay, that's why I wanted to make sure, because a friend of mine sent me a Unity Daily Word reader, and I'm going to go ahead and talk with these people, and I'm going to keep talking to them until I'm just going to tell them about, you know, the World Peace Diet. But there's one other question I had, and I'm wondering if I got this right. Last week I was listening to your circle in traffic in L.A., and, you know, I was listening on a three-way call, and I couldn't unmute. But you said something that I wanted to mention when you came to World Peace Diet Sunday. You said something about going to dinner with non-vegans, because you just touched on it a little bit, like I refused to pay for any meat or dairy, and people didn't like that. Did I hear it wrong? And just, I just want to correct that if I did, and maybe someone else heard it wrong too. Did you say that you would actually not sit at the same table with people who are eating animal products today? I mean, let's say you're going out to dinner at a restaurant that isn't vegan, and they're ordering animal products, and you would, did you say that you just wouldn't eat at the same table with those people? Did I hear you say that?
No, I didn't say that necessarily. I think I'd rather be more open to the intricacies of the present moment of what the actual situation was. I think there would be cases when I probably would not sit at the same table, but there would be other instances maybe where I would, you know, depending on the situation.
Okay. I wondered about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to even walk into a restaurant anymore as a vegan in my 10th year of being a vegan because of the World Peace Diet. When I walk into a restaurant that's doing any kind of meat dishes, it's hard for me to even sit in there, but...
Right. We feel totally the same. We don't even like to go into... even into vegetarian restaurants anymore.
Right.
We pretty much try to go only into vegan if we can.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, of course, we're very lucky to have Madeline here, so we don't have to go out that much at all. She's such a wonderful food preparer. But we do go out for various reasons to restaurants, and sometimes we find ourselves, for whatever reason, in a place where there may be some meat and is part of it, and you know, we have to we just have to just take it on a case-by-case basis. I think
mm-hmm.
you know, it's one of the most important things is to use our intuition, you know, and to realize that every situation is unique, and there may be some times when it's worth it to actually be there and be an example, and other times when you're just going to be an example in a different way and say no, I'm not, you know. We have had people ask us, is it okay for me to order some fish or something, you know, sitting at the same table, and we've said, yeah, no, actually, it's not all right if you order some fish, and not if you're going to sit at the table. I mean, we've had those kinds of conversations with people, and just told them, you know, no, it's not acceptable for us to sit there and eat my friends, you know. So, but I think it's, you know, it's, you have to take it on a case-by-case basis, really. You know, but
I just wanted to say that, you know, that most, I mean, I don't have any friends really that don't totally totally respect my vegan, and my husband
right.
and my vegan lifestyle. And when we're with them, and we happen to be with quite a few of them when we were down in Southern California, because that's where a lot of my friends are. And, and my friends here also where I live in Humboldt County are very, very receptive and very, very respectful to my vegan lifestyle and my husband's vegan lifestyle. But you know who I have trouble with? Our family members. So I don't know. I don't know what
yeah.
your what you have to say about your family. It's I've noticed that I have no real. You just said that you have nieces that have been, you know, vegan from birth. That's just wonderful. I really don't have any family members who went vegan because of their association with me. One of my sisters would love to, well, actually, both of them would love to be vegan, and they're not in a situation. But I don't want to get into that. I'm going to get off the line.
Right.
Thank you,
okay.
Will.
Thanks.
Much love to you both, and thank you so much for coming to World Peace Diet Sunday. It was a
yeah.
great session. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, we loved it. Madeline's right here, and she's
yeah.
Yeah.
Madeline was so great. Oh, it's great. I just listened to it again. It's you guys are like a ray of sunshine just coming out of the sky, like a couple of sunbeams. Thank you so much.
All right. Hey, you're the same. Thanks, Lily. Yeah.
Thank you. Know,
That Lily just touched on, I want to just emphasize the fact that you know it's important, I think, for us to stand up for our position. And I think as time goes on, most of us probably do find this. I'm not sure; it's different for everybody, but that our friends will more and more be in alignment with our food choices. And I would have to say it's true for us that we very rarely find ourselves in a position where. We're with friends or who just don't, you know, who want to have meat around us or anything like that, or even people who aren't our friends, acquaintances. Of course, it's pretty well known that we're vegan, so they don't really dare, I guess, not to, you know, kind of go along with it. But family members can be more difficult. There's quite a few people that are even icons in the movement, you know, well-known authors and speakers, you know, who have, you know, parents or even husbands and wives who are not vegan. And I think, you know, that can be just how it is. We've been more fortunate. It took many years. It took probably at least 15 years, I guess, or so for most of the people and virtually all the people in our family to go vegan, at least the ones that we're seeing, you know, regularly. And I'm really grateful if they did. That's great. It makes everything so much nicer when we're together. But I think in any event, you know, the most important thing is to, as best we can, use every opportunity to be a voice for the animals, not to take it personally when people resist us or whatever they do, and then again, not to maybe get bogged down in trying to convert just one or two people when we could maybe reach 30 or 40 with the same amount of energy. All right. So thank you so much, Lily, for that. And let's see. There's another person. See, I'm afraid my system's not working right because I can see there's another person here, 773, who would like to speak, who has pressed star 6, and yet I'm having a hard time unmuting. I apologize. You know, we're, like I say, we're in a very rural area here. Maybe try pressing it again, star 6. Those of you who, I think a few people have pressed it, and then I couldn't unmute you here. It's kind of grayed out for some reason. So anyway, it's been a great, I wanted to talk about a few other things. I know we're already at 10 past the hour, and we don't have too much more time. We don't want to go too late here, but there's a few more things that have been coming up over the last month since we were talking together. I'm going to be heading to England in just a week, actually less than a week, and the Brighton Veg Fest is going to be held in Brighton next weekend. And they'll also be giving a lecture in Bristol and in Birmingham and in London and then in Dublin. And Sandra Higgins, one of our facilitators, in Ireland and Dublin. She's a wonderful one. I'd really like to have her on, but it's just, you know, and it's very difficult for her to be on since it's the middle of the night. And she runs an animal sanctuary, and she's really a tireless worker for the animals and gets up very early in the morning to feed them. And I just want to let her get all her rest. But she's organizing a couple of events in Ireland and Dublin. And then there's going to be a vegan festival in Amsterdam, actually in Utrecht. And so I'll be speaking there and then coming back. And we'll be doing actually events between now and the next time we speak together, which will be the third Thursday in March, which is the 17th. We'll be in Florida doing a lecture here in Orlando and then going up to Jacksonville. And then basically working our way up the East Coast, up to New England, and then across the Midwest in the autumn. And this kind of a traveling schedule gives us the opportunity really to kind of immerse ourselves in many ways in the local grassroots movement and to just be inspired by people and to hopefully inspire people as well to continue the outreach, the teaching of vegan cooking classes and organizing events. There's many different kinds of events you've been organized, and I think it's important for our movement to get beyond just getting together to sort of feel good about ourselves, but to really do outreach to people who might be open to the message. And I see that happening a lot, to church groups, for example, to environmental groups, to health groups, to yoga groups. And also I think what's really important is to do more mentoring of new vegans. I think, you know, new vegans have a hard time very often. They get bombarded with all kinds of negativity from doctors and friends and coworkers and internally from their own doubts and fears. And so the more we can help mentor people, I think that's a really important thing to do. And we do have, I just encourage everybody, if you can, to go to our website, worldpeacedie.com, if you're a WorldPeaceDiet facilitator, and register. And we're going to start implementing a thing where people can go to our website, and we'll begin to, at one point when we get some more people signed up, it'll become a resource for people in a community somewhere who would like to have a mentor or someone they can turn to help them in their veganism. We'll have it on our website, the worldpeacediet.com website. And if you, and also be a good place for people who, if you're a facilitator and you'd like to have a World Peace Diet facilitator, a book study group, it would be a network of people that you could work with to have a group that's studying the World Peace Diet. So the more I think we can network in these ways, and especially just taking the initiative and doing something locally in our communities, I think that's really empowering. And the example of quite a few different people, we're going to be going to Myrtle Beach actually in not too long, I think in early May, and great example there of a woman who went through the World Peace Diet Facilitator training and did World Peace Diet study groups at the local Unity Church, and now that's another Unity Church actually with a minister is vegan and wants us to give the vegan message there. There's also people doing the same thing at the Unity Church in Portland. So as Lily mentioned, the Unity Movement, even though it was founded by vegans before the word vegan was even invented, actually, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore were practicing that compassion for animals and living it and teaching it. In the movement that they founded in Kansas City, and it's now really a nationwide and worldwide movement. But in the 1960s, everything went back. They serve meat now at the headquarters and, you know, at all the retreats and everything. And so it's been pretty much lost. But of course, the good news is it's coming back. You know, it's more and more coming back. I remember even 5 years ago, it looked, you could hardly see it at all. 10 years ago, you really couldn't see it at all. But now we're seeing more and more ministers being vegan and wanting us to actually talk about veganism. And I think a lot of it's because of congregants that are interested in this and sort of demanding that their spiritual teachers also teach this. And we're also seeing the Unitarian movement it's building up. We're giving more and more talks to the Unitarian movement also. There's actually, I think the Unitarian movement just recently it needs to get a certain number, I think it's 12 congregations, to pass a motion to change one of their main foundational statements, which is the foundational statement in the Unitarian movement is to affirm the inherent dignity and worth of every person. And there's now been 12 congregations that have voted in a formal way that they want to change that, and the wording of that to affirm and respect the inherent dignity and worth of every being. So to change it from person to being. So, of course, this is going to initiate a huge debate. But once you have, enough congregations that are requesting a change formally, and that's what's just happened, it's going to initiate a nationwide, they have to discuss that. And just that, this having them have to discuss it, I think it's great, because why not? Why exclude, non-human beings from inherent worth and dignity? And of course, the only reason is we want to eat them. And Unitarians are like the Unity and like the Buddhists and like many progressive, movements are still sort of failing to come to terms with the importance of, spirituality being, actual questioning of violence and actually no longer participating in violence. These are all good things to see. The last month has been characterized for me quite a bit by really positive, information about the, deepening, recognition of the connection between, spirituality and veganism. I think that's a really important thing. So, I've been interviewed. In fact, when I was at Hippocrates, we were there, and I was interviewed for a movie that's going to be coming out that's all about spirituality and the transformation of consciousness and veganism. And the interview went really well, I think, and we did another interview today with another person who's doing a similar movie on a film that will be coming out on the same topic of the importance of the connection between spirituality and veganism. So it just seems like there's a whole constellation of energy around bringing this message to more and more people. So I want to basically say a few things. One is that if we look at, for example, at dairy, and I remember very clearly myself when I was younger, as a child, say, going to church, and then after church, everybody goes into the social hall and has refreshments and drinks coffee and eats, if not meat, then definitely a lot of cheese and milk and baked products are made with cheese and dairy products and eggs. And there's just absolutely no questioning of this. And I think the average person is not even aware of the terrible violence that is involved in the dairy industry, how female animals are impregnated against their will, their babies are stolen, they're mutilated in a variety of ways, they're hung upside down, they're killed, and we're eating that violence and right in the church social hall, right? We're talking about teachings that are supposed to purify us and uplift us and make us live the golden rule of not doing unto others what we would not want to have done to us. And really an example, I think it's, I really highly recommend reading some of the books like the book by Keith Akers, The Lost Religion of Jesus, and this other book I read recently called The Origins of Christianity, by, I can't figure his name right this second, but anyway, that book is even better. I mean, it really goes into the absolute undeniable truth of the early Christians being vegetarians, that was the fundamental core teaching, was compassion for animals, was nonviolence, was not supporting war, it was living cooperatively. I mean, it was really a teaching of prayer, meditation, and kindness of ahimsa. And so here we are in churches where we're actually teaching exactly the opposite of that in a very powerful way, and how tragic it is that the religious traditions on our planet have so completely warped and twisted and nullified the original vision of their founders for kindness and compassion and caring for all living beings, and created institutions that actually support violence towards animals, and through that more war and environmental devastation and inequality and injustice. And so I think this is really where we're finding, I hope anyway, our true growth in the movement will be people who identify as spiritual people or religious people, and who we can reach with our message. And so I'm hoping that we see more and more of that happening. Atheists, it's great to reach them, and very often I think atheists are just as spiritual or more spiritual probably in many ways than people who identify in some other way with a particular religion. But the most important thing is that there's an ethical component that's been addressed for thousands of years, and it's now finally in many ways, in new ways, being understood and recognized, and I think it's really wonderful to see the opportunities that this is going to bring. And if anyone, you know, I think the yoga movement is another, you know, powerful manifestation of this. All right, so let's see. There's I'm going to try unmuting one more time this call if I can, but it looks like it's not going to work. And all right, so maybe next time we can hear from you. Area code 773-318-3830. I'm not sure of the name. I think it might be Basinski, looks like. But any event, I want to begin to wrap it up here. The resources for February 2016 have really quite a few. It's a lot this month. It's longer than usual. And the beginning is just a whole lot of interviews that have been posted online where I've been interviewed on a variety of different things. And I really just think these people did an incredibly good job of editing and creating these interviews. So one of them is a panel on factory farms. One is a panel on how the meat and dairy industries externalize costs. One is on the environmental impact of animal agriculture. These are all from the Real Truth About Health conference that was actually sponsored primarily by the Hippocrates Institute last September in Orlando. One is Time to Wake Up. One is Being Healthy and Saving the Planet. There's also interviews that we did in Dubai. These are, I mean, really, I just, if you have a chance to listen to any of these or watch them, some of them are really good. The one on how meat and dairy industries externalize costs, is a especially good one, actually. The woman who was, on the panel with, me and, with David, she was definitely not vegan when we started that conversation, and made quite a thing about the fact she was not vegan. And by the end of the panel, she was she had changed her tune. It was very interesting. So anyway, it's really interesting things, and there's a number of new films coming out too, which is really great to see in interviews, and so you can kind of have a look at those. Also, it's great to see that Kip Anderson, who as you know is a World Peace facilitator, who's the producer of the wonderful film Cowspiracy. He's got a follow-up film called What the Health, which is very similar in the orientation, and I think this is going to be a fantastic film. Also, I'm not in this one. This is really health experts showing it similarly how just as mainstream environmental organizations very often cover up the devastating effects of animal agriculture, so also the mainstream health organizations also cover up the devastating effects of animal agriculture on our health. and the effects of that. So I think it looks like it's going to be a fantastic film. I do want to also mention, I have it actually down in the March's resources, but there's an increasing kind of pushback to conspiracy that's coming from people who are saying that they're exaggerating in their statistics, and that maybe, you know, it's a film that has an agenda. It's not just presenting information in an unbiased way. And I have to say, I really think that those criticisms are unfounded, primarily. I looked today, it took some time, and looked into the research by Robert Goodland, and Jeff Anhang, the special research that they did a few years ago, which said that in, like, the livestock's long shadow research shocked everyone. It was done by the United Nations, saying that 18% of all greenhouse gases are caused by animal agriculture, and Goodland and Anhang's research went way beyond that and said a full 51% is caused by animal agriculture. And so, you know, a lot of people said that that's ridiculous and really cast aspersions on them for that study. But quite honestly, I spent whatever it is, $40 to just, you know, today actually, so that I would be allowed to see the article that was printed in a scholarly journal, you know, where you had a criticism of their paper and then their response to that criticism. And I have a PhD from Berkeley, and part of my coursework was on qualitative research methodologies. And I have to say that my sense of, you know, this whole debate is that these two men, Goodland and Anhang, were eminently qualified, and that what they say 51% is right. I mean, they're actually certified environmental assessment specialists, and none of the people who did Livestock's Long Shadow are environmental assessment specialists. These are people who really know what they're talking about and know what they're doing. And they included in their assessment the cutting down of rainforest. And everybody who's criticizing says, well, you can't include cutting down of rainforest as part of it. And, you know, why not? I mean, cutting down of rainforest is for animal agriculture, and it's devastating to the forests, which are a major part of this whole equation. And you're growing soybeans and putting cattle and creating huge numbers of cattle through the whole process. And that, so I really, you know, I'm quite upset, because one of these articles was written by a vegan who said, oh, no vegan should ever say that 51% of global greenhouse gases, that study, we shouldn't quote that study. It's embarrassing. It makes us look stupid. And I think that's terrible. I mean, it does not make us look stupid. I think it's a very good study. So anyway, that's, there's a lot, that conversation, I'm sure, is going to be going on for quite a while. But anyway, there's a lot of things on here. It's really getting time for us to wrap it up here. And I'm hearing a little noise on the line for some reason. I don't see. There we go. Maybe that's it. Please, go through this if you can. There's just so many wonderful, good things happening. Moby just opened a vegan restaurant in Los Angeles. This other guy I just read about the other day, who owns 15 restaurants in New York City, he went vegan, and he's converting most of these restaurants to vegan. There's just a lot of other powerful articles in here. I think this one, How Big Oil Conquered the World, it's a short video showing the impact of the Rockefeller dynasty on everything, on animal agriculture, on war, on pharmaceutical industry, on the educational industry. I mean, it's really very, very interesting to see how these things are all connected. This TED talk about leather and meat without killing animals, I think, is very, very interesting. There's just so many things here. We could really talk, but the impacts of overfishing on oceans, very important thing. The fact that Hellman's, you know, was suing actually Hampton Creek for calling their vegan mayonnaise mayonnaise, has now come out with their own vegan mayonnaise. which is interesting. Ben and Jerry's is not selling four vegan ice creams. You know, we have these kinds of things happening, which is, I think, very interesting. Advice from a vegan cardiologist, which is great. You know, there's two kinds of cardiologists, those who are vegan and those who haven't done any research. But, you know, we're seeing, you know, amazing progress being made. Plant Pure Nation, that film made by Nelson Campbell, has just been launched on Netflix. And they're also launching a whole healthy meal shipped straight to your door program. These are all grassroots movements that are taking off, that are very important, I think, very helpful, and part of the whole thing. So we see many other articles here pointing to the fact that the vegan way of living is just continually growing in people's consciousness. I think that's what really has to happen, is in our consciousness. All right, so I'm going to, I really want to thank everyone for your contributions tonight. I'm sorry, I apologize that we had a little bit of technical difficulties in this place where we are here in the boondocks of Central Florida. And next, our next World Peace Diet Circle, on the 17th, we will probably most likely be somewhere else, although we're not totally sure at this point where we will be then, somewhere between here and Jacksonville. And so let's just take a moment as we close our time together. I want to thank everyone who has been part of the call. I want to thank all of you who said something tonight for also contributing. A big thank you to Andy and Sven, who are in South Africa, who continue to inspire us by their presence and their commitment to the cause. They joined us on the call tonight. We didn't hear anything from them, but they were with us. They get up early. They get, you know, set their alarm for 3 or whatever it is, 4 o'clock in the morning, to be with us and to be on this call. And they are just a wonderful inspiration to the vegan movement, and we wish them all the best. And I want to thank Lily Macy. Now she is just launching. This coming Sunday will be the first reading of the third reading of the World Peace Diet. So please tell your friends about this. You can go to worldpeacediet.com and click on upcoming events. And at the top of that page, that has all of our upcoming events. And at the top of the page, there is World Peace Diet Sunday and the phone number and the code, so anyone can join that call. And we're telling people about it as wherever we travel. I think it's a wonderful tool for people who want to read the, maybe, you know, understand the ideas, but are maybe afraid to read the World Peace Diet, or who feel that they don't understand it completely or would like to have some support as a vegan community. This is a real vegan community, and it's also being shown to really help people become more vegan, more effective as vegan advocates. So, yeah, we have that, and thank you, Lily, so much for continuing that and dedicating yourself to the World Peace Diet Sundays. And there's so many more. I mean, gosh, we have Judy Carmen on the call, who's working so hard on the spiritual aspect, and with a prayer circle for animals, and Tara, of course, who's a long time, such a strong advocate for animals, and many, I don't want to start naming names because I have to name everybody. I don't know everybody who's on the call, but thank you all. Marlene, don't forget, Marlene has her weekly vegan radio show, which I've mentioned a number of times, and she's called in. It's incredibly good. I mean, there's a massive amount. The archives are there. It's based in Massachusetts and Worcester. We're looking forward to visiting Worcester in August. We'll be up in Worcester. And so wherever you are, let us know if we're maybe coming anywhere near you. We'd love to come and do an event in your area, if that's possible, you know, over the next year or so. We're doing quite a bit of traveling. And again, sorry if we didn't get to you this evening. So let's join our hearts together as we go forward into another month of being able to know that even though we are each living our own unique lives, we're not separate. Ultimately, our consciousness is connected at the deepest level of kindness, compassion, and caring, of understanding the infinite interconnectedness of all life, and that we're part of a family. Maybe this is we are the true family. That is our true, we are the true brothers and sisters of each other, because we're committed to the same thing. We're committed to doing the best we can to be a voice for those who have no voice and whose voice has been taken from them, and to help raise the level of awareness as best we can by being, as Gandhi said, the change that we'd like to see in the world, and questioning the inner voices and the outer voices that put us at odds with other living beings and allow us to exploit them. There are major changes coming to planet Earth in the next few months, and I think it's really exciting times to be alive. These are such important times. Congratulations to all of you for being here and being among the real leaders and pioneers of another way of living based on kindness and compassion and ancient spiritual wisdom. All right, so we'll see you all, hear you all, I should say, on March 17th for the World Peace Diet Circle then. And we'll go out here now with our song. Let's see, how about duck song, good old duck song. Thank you all so much. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy and free. Much love to you all. Thank you so much for joining us.